This means that Donald Trump will be the 45th president of the United States.
This is your life now. This is our election now. This is us. This is our country. It's real.
Hi, and welcome back to the 45th. Rabia here, and I'm here with Susan Simpson. Hey, Susan.
Hey, Rabia.
How you doing?
I'm fine. Let's go with that. Everything's good.
You're fine holding down things in Washington, D.C. while I was out of the country?
Yes, yeah, while you were escaped to Canada.
Man, and it was, can I tell you?
What was it like
hard to come back.
Land.
It was
well,
hard
if it was winter, it wouldn't have been hard to come back.
You know what? The winters are not in Toronto. They're not as bad as everybody says. I mean, we have very similar weather patterns between Toronto and here, but I'll say this. When I left the DC area, it was like a swamp. It was gorgeous. The weather was just gorgeous the whole time, and the food scene is amazing, and Justin Trudeau, hello, and I just felt like this like big sigh of relief, and then all of my husband's relatives, because we went because it was his a family wedding and his family, we're just like, oh God, we're so sorry about what's happening in America. I was like, okay, I accept your condolences. You know, not just Trump, but you know, all the violence, the shootings.
The
I mean, it's been a lot going on. So,
yeah. Well, it is currently 10 o'clock at night because we're recording late this week. So I am doing something I have never done before.
What's that?
I am drinking and podcasting.
What are you drinking?
A beer. I'm not going to go crazy here. But I'm breaking the first rule of podcasting.
Oh, God. You know, I feel like you should always have a beer, especially when talking about this stuff. I can't do that, but I am having chai.
Tonight, it's going to help out.
See, I've got a chai with two tea bags in it, so you know I'm going to be on.
Oh, double bagging.
Double bagging it. All right, let's start off now. We've got a little bit of update with what's going on at ODNI, which is the Office of the Director of National Intelligence. What is happening there, Susan?
Yeah, so last week, Watt and I discussed what was going on with the shakeup there. At the time, it was unclear what the succession would be after the current leader, Dan Coats, stepped down. And Sue Gordon was, by law, should be the next director. But she is considered she's a career official. She's been there forever. She has support all across the aisle. She's not partisan. She's not a political flunky, which is why Trump didn't want her. So he wanted her out.
And she was the deputy director?
She was. Okay. And she is now gone as well. Apparently she was in a meeting, I think on election security. And Dan Coats came in and said, hey, you got to go turn in your resignation.
Whoa.
So she did. It was kind of hurried. So it was handwritten, or the cover note was handwritten. And made it clear this was not by her choice. She says, I'm not doing this because I want to, but because, quote, you deserve to have your team.
You deserve to have your team. See, I think that's kind of a burn.
I mean, for most presidents, it's true. They deserve to have the team they choose. That's why they're there, is to pick people who head these agencies.
Mm-hmm.
But also, at the same time, the reason the law was written the way it was written for the case of Odian and I is that Congress didn't want the president to have full control over it. They wanted to have a very strict line succession. They wanted someone who's experienced and who knew the ropes. They wanted someone who was very reliable. They wanted a careerist, or at least someone who was very well familiar with these processes, because it's like the point position for all of our national security apparatuses.
Mm.
The Trump went around that again, just like with Ken Cuccinelli, whatever, who is his director over at USCIS. And he got Sue Gordon out, got Dan Coats out, and got to pick his own person. Now, his choice was actually kind of interesting. He picked a guy named Joseph McGuire, who is now our acting director. He's a former SEAL, and until today, I guess, he was the head of the U.S. Counterterrorism Center.
Was he the head of the NCTC? Do you know if it was that?
Yes, okay. Yes.
All right.
And he's not, I mean, he's not a careerist. He's not someone who's like part of the quote unquote deep state, but he's also not necessarily a total Trump loyalist. So Trump could have done way worse for his pick. It's a sign, I think, that there was a lot of pressure behind the scenes. Like Burr and a few other senators were extremely annoyed about what Trump was doing. So I think this was a compromise pick, which is good because we definitely don't need to have the director of the National Intelligence Center to be someone who's just a Trump yes man. So.
Okay, so let me just ask you this. And I might have missed this, or maybe Canada just wiped it clean from my brain. Why did the shakeup happen again? What was the issue with Coates?
Dan Coates was also not sufficiently a loyalist. He'd been butting heads with Trump from the start, and he was not a yes man. So he was never going to last.
Okay.
Like, Coates was not great. Coates was definitely like, let's give him like a C+ in terms of not being an authoritarian's flunky. Like, okay, maybe B minus. But, you know, he did the bare minimum to not totally just follow Trump's loyalist requirements, but he didn't go out of his way to make things better.
Mm. Well, I saw that you noted that McGuire, I mean, not being a loyalist, like he actually has not interacted with the president that often because apparently the administration has never, quote, established a tempo of having regular counterterrorism briefings. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, that was an interesting article I read about McGuire's relationship with Trump. Apparently, they haven't interacted much. There's not, like, a personal connection there right. or anything. Except for the fact there should be something of a personal connection there because he's the head of the Counterterrorism Center and should theoretically have been briefing Trump semi-regularly on counterterrorism.
Right. Especially with the uptick of domestic terrorism we're seeing, which it could just be they're not. Well, I will say this, though. NCTC, and I've worked with NCTC. NCTC, actually, National Counterterrorism Center, and they actually don't at all do any domestic terrorism. They're all outward facing. So it could be for that reason there's hasn't been as big of a foreign threat lately. I don't know. I'm trying to give them the benefit of the doubt. I could be way off base. But either way, you should know your...
I think they're just not organized.
Yeah, you still know the director of the NCTC. Okay. So any other people change so quickly? There's such quick turnaround in this administration. Anybody else who's dipped out in the last week or so? We lost some more people?
Yes. And I'm now blank. We lost some deputies. We lost some... There was like a big exodus from...
It's just Ivanka now, right? I mean, Ivanka... I think Ivanka's the only one left.
No. Like, so there's a lot of lower level people leaving. Not lower level, but like second and third level people, like deputies and third in lines. There's a great op-ed, I think it was Washington Post, from someone at State who finally left. That's worth reading if you haven't read it. Basically, it said, like, there is no deep state. Or if there is one, it's fucking terrible and useless. It's just a bunch of people who are trying to survive and trying to get by their jobs and keep doing what they're supposed to do. And by doing that, they're enabling Trump. So I cannot do this anymore. That's why I'm quitting. So wow. It was a pretty
good... It was an op-ed?
Yeah. And it was worth reading.
Okay. All right. Moving on. We've had some rough news today with the economy. So what's going on?
Well, with the caveat, my notes say about the stock market. The stock market is not the economy.
Right.
They can't be considered the same thing. But obviously, like...
But it signals something. I mean, right?
There's something a little bit off. Now, I've been... harping on this for a while. If I was actually in finance, I'd probably call like a perma bear because I think I've been, since December, I have been freaked out by everything.
Yeah. You're like a recession's on the way. Yeah.
But like December is when everything got crazy. Things just stopped making any sense. Yeah. And it's been pretty clear, I think, that we're heading for a bad place for quite a while now. And the bad place is very rapidly approaching.
Mm-hmm.
So the stock market's responding.
Are you
finally,
sure it's not here? Maybe the bad place is here, Susan. I feel like it's
the bad place probably already is here, actually. Okay. And we're just trying to realize that now. So let's talk about the stock market. What happened today, we had the Dow close like down 800 points.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently right now, as we're recording late at night, Australia and the Asian markets are tanking too.
Oh, boy. Because the reporting this morning was that there's an inverted yield curve on the 10 and 2-year.
Yeah. And that's definitely very... Big old problem.
Which, by the way, for the first time in my life, I'm learning what any of this actually means. Inverted yield curve.
Well, you didn't learn in 2008?
I don't remember. I just remember recession, bubble. I don't remember inverted yield curve.
Details are blurred out, like the trauma of everything.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I'm so glad. I like, the worst, like, mistake of my life was graduating law school, 2009. Mm. I could go back and, like, be like, hey.
Can I stick around a few more years?
Just like, don't do it then. That's a bad time. So
yeah.
Now,
yeah, I remember it was a rough time for new graduates. Yeah, there were no jobs. Yeah. Should we start by explaining what this actually is, this inverted yield curve 2 and 10, what that means?
So no one knows what the yield curve is. It's just a word you like throw around and talk about the economy with.
Well, but generally, okay. I mean, like basically what, like if you think about like a conventional bank, right, and you go and you do a short-term investment versus a long-term investment, what this means is that U.S. Treasury bonds will give you a higher yield if you get 2-year bonds versus 10-year bonds, which is why it's inverted. It should be the other way around. That's yeah.
As usually longer term investment. You want to have a more money coming in to make it worth your while.
And so when that flips, it's a bad sign for, I don't know, some reason.
Well, so the thing is, we don't actually even, well, we don't agree on why it's a bad sign. And there's lots of theories about what the problem is. But we do know is that like there's a very strong correlation between yield curve inversions and recessions. Of course, caveat, correlation is not causation. And there are occasional false signals. However, at the levels we're at now, there's never been a false signal like this. Like it's, this would be a very much a strong first if there was not a recession next like while out.
I read that inverted yield curves preceded every single recession since 1956, every single one in this country. But what I don't know is, have there been times when you've had inverted yield curves and not hit a recession? Because that would be a whole different story, right?
Yes, occasionally, but not so the 3 month and then the 10 years, like the one that's most typically talked about. And there have been times where that has inverted and it has not led to a recession, but not when it's been extended for like, I think, what, like 3 months, a full quarter. That has basically always led to a recession. And the 210 has always been a recession. And here's the issue. Like, there's also like this cause and effect thing. Like, is this signaling the economy is going bad, or are investors so primed for the signal that when the signal goes off, they make the economy tank? And it's probably a little bit of both. But also what it seems to be happening is it's not necessarily that that the inversion itself is a cause of something bad, but what it's reflecting is that investors, collective knowledge or like collective irrational just base impulses channeled into number form is showing that investors think that something's very wrong. Because something is extremely wrong. Something is extremely fucked up in the economy right now. Okay. Putting out there.
And what they might be then liable to do is pull their money out of stocks, put them in bonds, and that's how the markets are going to tank. Is that what happens when these investors are scared like that?
It also means their predictions like about time horizons are kind of skewed. It means that they think that long term is not a good investment right now.
Right.
It also has to do with like if investors think that they know when the bottom's going to happen, they want to have their money out so they can invest in the stock market again. So what will happen is that after the recession starts, that will already have started trending into a more normal range again. So this is not the calm for the storm, because there's no calmness to it. But this is the prelude. Now, here's the big question. When you have the inversion, the recession is not usually immediate. It usually takes a while, sometimes a long while. But will it be a long while this time? I don't think so. So sometimes it could be like 22 months out. This is not like a long-term indicator in some cases. But it can also be a short-term one. And I think we're like, what, 6 months out from the 3 month, 10-year? Anyway, my point being, things are going to get bad quick. And it's not just because of the yield. It is because, like, our economy has been acting bizarre for quite some time. I do think that Trump's, the whole tax reform, which is a bad word for it, but whatever. I think that probably extended the lifeline for a little while, and that this may have happened sooner if it wasn't for that. But that was just like a sugar high. That was not going to actually cause structural improvement. And it's also not just America. And when things go bad, which I think within 3 months at the utmost, it's going to get bad, it's not going to be all Trump's fault. It just won't be. A lot of it will be for the recovery. Mm.
Susan, how would you describe, you always look great every time I see you, but how would you describe your style in one word?
I am, you know what, clothes are hard and a lot of things to think about. And as someone, as an attorney in the professional workforce, like trying to find the right clothes is more brain space than I have room for. I just don't. I wish I was fashionable naturally, but I'm just not, which is why I am such a fangirl for Stitch Fix, because they do all the work for you.
They do all the work for you. I gotta say, at least in the last 3 or 4 occasions when you and I have been like at this conference, at that convention, traveling to LA, whatever, together, I've been like, oh, I like this, what you're wearing. And you've been like, oh, Stitch Fix.
Well, I'll see you tomorrow. And in fact, it'll be Stitch Fix. So prepare yourself.
It'll be Stitch Fix for our trip tomorrow too. Well, let me tell our listeners about Stitch Fix in case you haven't heard about it. It's an online personal styling service that delivers your favorite clothing, shoes, and accessories directly to you. They have lots of brands, the brands you know and love, and they have exclusive styles that you actually cannot find anywhere else.
Just go to stitchfix.com and complete your style profile. And then your expert personal stylist will send you a hand-picked box of items based on your style and preferences and wardrobe needs. They even have men's and kids' boxes, too.
Which is, by the way, so exciting.
Yeah.
Because I know my man needs it.
Which one? Little one or big one?
Well, I can handle a little one, but the big one, I don't got time for him. So.
Yeah, like, what do men wear? Like, I have no idea. That's too much. I'm not even going to try to learn what men have to wear.
Yeah.
So get started today at stitchfix.com/45th and get an extra 25% off when you keep everything in your box. That's stitchfix.com/45th. stitchfix.com/45th.
Go ahead. No, so you were going to talk about kind of like what's happening globally. You said it's not just America.
Yeah, it's not just us. And Trump is not like able to control the whole economy. The tariff thing, the trade war, that is part of it. That's part of why the jitters are hitting a fever pitch. But while the jitters may actually tilt us somewhere bad, that's not what's causing the badness. That's just like the market realizing actually shit screwed up. Let's try and have a better allocation of what stuff should be. But Germany right now, Germany's doing really bad. They're probably already in recession. UK, probably already in recession.
But Trump today tweeted that Germany is playing the game and doing great.
No, they're not. Their manufacturing is way down. Mm-hmm. Their economy is kind of teetering. UK is
screwed.
If they're not in trouble yet, well, if they're not there yet, they will be in October when hard Brexit comes.
Right.
Which will also hurt Germany. Which will also
the EU is like, we are not returning your phone calls. The EU is like, we are not negotiating anything. There's
yeah. Like, talk to the hand. It's gonna hurt us. It's gonna hurt you. But like, we cannot deal with your nonsense anymore. So yeah, when hard Brexit happens, that could be if I could definitely see. I mean, it's kind of predictable and a little bit movie line storyline, but the Brexit could be a trigger that causes everything to go to shit. But then we get Singapore. Singapore's in recession. We've got. I mean, every major economy right now, I can't think of one that's actually being like, hey, we're cool. Australia, which has not had a recession since I was an adult, they look like they might have one. They're first in like, what, a couple decades?
I wonder how India and Russia are doing.
India, not great. Russia has never been doing great, so it's okay. I mean, no, that's not true. Russia's actually doing worse, too. That's why there's now like sustained mass protest in Moscow,
right.
Which is unheard of.
Right.
So yeah, it's global.
But Trump, in response to this news about the yield curve and all that, basically is like, this is just the Fed screwing us up. This is all about the Fed.
He hates Jay Powell. He's going to blame Jay Powell.
Yeah.
For the rest of his life, probably.
He is still insisting we're winning big time against China. You know, I don't understand, like, how he is connecting all these dots, although maybe he's really not, and it's like one of those mishmash type of things. But he's
picking together clues he's heard from his briefings and from people around him and from the TV. And he is trying to blame someone else. That's what it comes down to.
I mean, he's basically doing everything he can to get the Fed to cut faster and lower and faster and lower, right? Basically cut interest rates lower and lower. Do you think he really thinks that that's what's going to like stabilize, you know, the markets and...
Yeah, because that's what he thought that Obama was doing. Mm-hmm. He accused Obama and then Clinton for years of like trying to artificially stimulate the economy by having their Fed in their pocket and cutting rates to a low rate. He thought that's how the game was played. Like, he legit thought that's what they were doing and why, like, this was all a lie. The Obama economy was a lie because it's all about like artificially low rates. So that's a sign of how he's going to be as president, where he thinks his Fed is there to watch his back and to artificially extend this zombie economy for as long as they can until they hit November 2020. The thing is, though, like, I mean, yes, lowering rates, it's not so Trump's complaint about the rates being too high, that's not like an insane position. There are legit economists who can get behind that. But also, it's not going to fix things right now. It's just too far beyond that point. And if he did, it at best would sustain us a bit longer. But look what happened with the tariffs. So tariffs were announced, whatever, like, in July to go into effect in September. Yesterday or today, I can't remember now, Trump, they announced that, oh, actually, those September tariffs again on China are going to come into effect in, you know, 2020, January, after Christmas, to avoid causing harm to consumers, which is an acknowledgement that the tariffs are actually hurting Americans and not the Chinese, which is Trump's favorite go-to lie. So that temporarily did boost the stock market. But then today, even after that, yeah,
all this happened. And shit's going. That decision, do you think, came because a few days ago, China announced that it is officially canceling all purchases of all U.S. agricultural products, which is a huge, huge, huge blow to our farming industry. And so, and that is in retaliation for the announcement of these coming tariffs. So do you think that's why Trump pushed them further?
My total guess is that his advisors finally got his ear, because he was saying on Fox News, when they had the ticker running down below all day, when he's watching TV all day during his vacation, that his aggressiveness in the tariffs is causing market uncertainty, market concern, causing the stocks to hurt, and that there's a very direct correlation between his tweets about the tariffs and the market taking dives. So if he wants to stop seeing all that red in his TV screen, he should maybe do something better about the tariffs. I think that's probably what actually convinced him to do the delay, but that's not going to help. Like, the tariffs definitely are exasperating things, but the tariffs are not the only problem here. I would love to blame Trump for it all, but that's not what's happening.
Well, we can blame him, though, for China canceling purchases of all our products.
Oh, yeah, part.
There's that.
People in Iowa, you can blame Trump for that. That's totally on him.
Yeah. Well, but here's the thing, though. You know what Trump did? Trump's like, not only did he already give a bailout, which didn't help farmers, I mean, to the extent that of their losses, but he also announced after China did this that, you know what, that's fine. It's not going to hurt you, and we're going to give you more aid in 2020. So, like, hang in there.
Yeah. Well, we'll see how that goes for them. So China has its own problems. I'm not in finance. I am not qualified to talk on this topic. But if I had to guess, a combination of China's inherent structural flaws that have been disguised until now and hard Brexit is going to be what causes, like, the tipping point. Because China is – the world needs China to be a growing economy. They're not – they've always inflated their numbers. They've always – lied about what their actual growth rate is, but they have had growth, and we need that growth. If China does stop growing, or even not, they, dear God, hopefully they don't stop growing. If China even like goes to like a 1.5% range of growth, that's gonna really fuck up the whole global economy. So they also have a lot of their own problems going on, not just Hong Kong, which is part of it, but they have their like long-term issues with how they've allocated their investments, all the ghost zombie cities. A combination of that in Asia, Brexit in Europe, and then Trump in America is a perfect storm for Great Recession 2.0.
I'm just trying to figure out what that means. Like, what do we do?
What can you do? Like,
what can you do? Yeah.
Reallocate your 401k to less risky investments right now before it's too late.
Tonight.
The thing is, okay, look, I'll qualify that. When these like factors come into play, it's often the case that the economy, or the stock market is still going to be peaking in the future. Like 2-3 months out from now, which is possible. But also, if you get out right now, you're not going to get the losses that follow. So that's my totally unqualified don't to it.
Just don't listen. Get on CNBC. Don't listen to us.
Yeah.
All right. So speaking of China and what's happening there vis-a-vis Hong Kong, Trump tweeted out that he got an intelligence briefing that China is moving troops to the border. Everybody stay calm.
Oh God.
What?
No,
fuck, Susan.
Oh, fuck.
Did you see that tweet?
No, I did. And I am still 95% certain he is not talking about intelligence briefings. I swear to God, he is talking about some bullshit tweet someone put out.
Oh, that's even worse.
I'm not kidding. Like, not bullshit tweets. So there's a tweet from someone who was there, and like in Shenzhen, they had some film of some heavy Chinese artillery and like tanks or whatever the fucking words are, I don't care. So they had this, and it was kind of viral. But like, wow, that's really close to Hong Kong. And you got lots of military stuff there. Like, that's kind of concerning. But also, Hong Kong is very urban and hilly and tiny streets. You don't – bringing tanks into Hong Kong would be a chore.
A chore,
it's
yeah.
It's not –
But it doesn't mean they won't do it. It doesn't mean they can't do it.
It doesn't, but like it doesn't make much sense. Like you got people protesting in the Hong Kong airport. Like the tanks aren't going to get there.
Right.
So maybe, but also this tweet was just someone observing something that's probably a signal by China, but not an indication of imminent invasion of Hong Kong. I really swear to God, I think that Trump was not listening to his advisors, not listening to like any intel briefings. I think he saw the tweets about it and the over-panic responses to it. And that's what he was talking about.
Who was he telling to stay calm? That's what I want to know. I didn't understand that part of the tweet.
Twitter. He's telling Twitter
stay calm. China got this.
Twitter was freaking out over it.
China's got this. Speaking of dumbass shit he said on Twitter this week, I got to get to the Russian missile explosion and his response to it before we talk about his best friend in North Korea. So apparently, late last week, there was a mysterious explosion, and U.S. intelligence was like, what's that? Because, you know, with Russia, you're not going to get, like, accurate information about what's really happening when they really effed up. It turns out, some people are now dead. It turns out that they were testing a new type of nuclear-propelled cruise missile. And this was something that, I don't know if you remember, Putin gave this speech. I can't remember where it was last year, where he had, like, this animation or some kind of video. It wasn't animation. It was a video of like this missile behind him. Do you remember that? It's called Skyfall.
No. Isn't that a James Bond movie?
No, it's actually him. And so apparently that was supposed to be this missile. And this is something that in terms of like technology, like the U.S. has not been able to achieve apparently at some
point. Because it's incredibly stupid. It's incredibly scary and stupid.
It's dangerous.
It's moronic.
You know, there's
nuclear-powered cruise missiles. Not nuclear cruise, like nuclear-powered cruise missiles.
Exactly.
Nah.
But
that's not a great idea.
But Putin wants these kinds of missiles because apparently these could evade American missile defenses, and also they could reach like any part of the globe. So this explosion happens and they figure out that they were testing some prototype of this nuclear powered missile and it blew up and 7 people died and radiation levels like 16 times normal. People in surrounding cities, taken iodine and then, you know, what Trump tweets, he tweets, "The United States is learning much from the failed missile explosion in Russia. We have similar, though more advanced, technology. The Russian Skyfall explosion has people worried about air around the facility and far beyond. Not good."
Okay, first off, failed missile explosion.
It was actually a highly successful missile explosion. Like,
that's not the part that failed.
That's the part God. That succeeded.
So, last week in Russia, there were, in fact, 2 major military explosions.
Oh, one.
Yeah, one was much more, like, TV-friendly. That was not the one we're talking about. That was in Siberia. It was a munitions factory. It went off, like, twice. There was lots of, like, cool explosions and scary ones, which is bad, but that was not nuclear.
Right.
That's the video going around. Weapon. People tagging it with, like, the one happening with the nuclear bay stuff. That was not the one that was videoed. The one in Nyadanska, that's also the city. And I'm going to try. I've been reading these words and like, I'm like, I could totally say that. And now I'm trying to talk. I'm like, I cannot possibly say that word.
Blame the alcohol.
Yeah. It's definitely the alcohol's fault. Not because I can't at all pronounce words whatsoever. The explosion that happened in the nuclear one, it's Russia. So we don't know the full details yet. And it's hard to say what happened. The initial reactions were like, okay, this looks bad, but it's not terrible, which is a little bit too 3.6. Not great, not terrible for me. So it's probably not another Chernobyl. It's probably not going to be that level, but there definitely was a nuclear explosion. At least 7 people died so far. As far as we can tell, it was a nuclear-propelled missile something went very wrong. I don't think we're all going to die because of it.
No.
But it's scary that Russia's doing this. And this is definitely not a time for us to be, like, rolling back the nuclear treaties between us.
Well, apparently, Russia feels, like, unfettered to be pursuing these weapons because there apparently is no treaty that would prevent them from pursuing this kind of development. Like,
yeah, but even the ones that existed, like, Trump's rolling back. So now we're just going to – it's like, oh, whatever. You want nukes? Saudi Arabia, you have nukes. Right. UAE, you have nukes. Everyone has nukes. Not Iran. Iran, no nukes for right. you. Everyone else, have nukes.
Yeah. Well, now that Trump's like, well, we have something even fancier, apparently.
Oh, God, that tweet. I keep – no, we don't. So, like, again, oh, my God. So, I I'm not a nuclear weapons expert. But I follow lots of them on Twitter.
Yeah.
And it is very clear that we do not have that kind of technology. We don't want it. It's not a good idea.
Or he has revealed some secret nuclear program none of us know about. Is that possible?
That is the other option. Yeah. On the other hand, I swear to God, the Hong Kong tweets was just about the Twitter drama. So I think this is him saying, like, the Russians have technology we don't have. And he's like, we've got that, but it works.
Right, but it's better. Well, Putin was like, I'm not sitting down for this. He said, well, I mean, in response to that tweet, the Kremlin spokesperson said that Putin has repeatedly said that Russian developments in this area surpass the level achieved by other countries and are quite unique. So right now we're going, there's like a, you know, whose is bigger, better type of.
But whose button is the most protruding?
It's the most protruding. I know we've got a mushroom in the White House. Not sure how that's going to go, but.
Oh, God. Oh, God. Toad. Oh,
Toad, yeah.
Mario Kart.
Sorry. No, he's so cute. No, please don't.
No, I'm
sorry.
Moving on.
Moving on to another nuclear threat, North Korea. I'm going to tell you a story about deodorant deprivation, okay, Susan? Because here's what happened. I got back from a 10-day trip from Canada, and, you know, the worst part about traveling is coming back and unpacking, and especially when you're traveling with the whole family. There are like 4 suitcases to unpack. For the past 2 days, I have not had time, and you know what has been held hostage inside my suitcase? My native deodorant. Not a child, not an animal, but my native deodorant, and I am so embarrassed because I have been a stinky hot mess for the last 2 days. I went and worked out today. I came back, took a shower. I said, this is it. I got to get that bag out of the car and get my native. And I did immediately. And it was so good to finally put my native deodorant right back on and smell lovely like I do right now.
Well, it is a super great deodorant. So I'm glad you got it back from your baggage and travels.
It not just keeps me clean and fresh and all that. But what I love about native is that, you know, it's got no aluminum. There's no parabens, talc. It is full of all these great ingredients you find in nature, like coconut oil and shea butter and tapioca starch. And all these things do everything that you want a deodorant to do, basically. And there's no animal testing, by the way.
And they have great smells. Which one do you have, by the way?
I have the one that is, oh, it smells like cucumber. It's cucumber and something else, but I smell cucumbery when I put it on. I like that.
That is definitely not what I have. The coconut and vanilla, standard, but pretty good.
Oh, that sounds good. I might try that next time. Look, people love Native. They have over 8,000 five-star reviews, and you can check them out on the Today Show, Women's Health, Elle, Good Morning America. I mean, they're everywhere.
Like, if you use it every day, it should be good, right?
Right. And there's no risk to try. With Native, you get free returns and exchanges in the United States. So subscribe today and save 17%. You can save $2 per stick and have Native conveniently delivered to your door every 1, 2, 3, or 4 months, however you want to do it.
For 20% off your first order, visit nativedeodorant.com and use promo code 45th during checkout. That's 20% off your first purchase by visiting nativedeodorant.com and using promo code 45th. So North Korea has been on a total, like, attention-seeking spree. They're being drama queens. They're like,
happening?
Hey, look at me! That is totally what's happening. They have done 5 sets of missile tests, short-range missiles in the past, like, 3 weeks. But new, not just the old kind. Like, they've got some new technology. Like, they've been busy. They have gotten some serious new technology developments that they are showing off right now. And they are being like, hey, Trump, look at me, pay attention. And Trump is like, it's okay. I don't mind. It's fine. We never talked about short-range ballistic missiles, so it's okay. Keep doing what we're doing in North Korea. So they're clearly trying to provoke him. He is provoked.
Do you think they're trying to provoke him? Do you think they're just testing how far they can continue to go by doing this shit and sending him a letter and saying, hey, it worked. We're going to do
both,
this again.
Both. But they are provoking him because, like, there's been no discussion since the DMZ summit or whatever it was. That's been, like, there's been no substantive discussion since then because America – and by America, I basically mean Bolton and half of Pompeo aren't going to allow this kind of bullshit to, like, go unchecked. They would rather just, like, destroy North Korea. So instead, there have been no talks. And North Korea wants to have more engagement, more progress for them, more advancements for them. And this is their way of being like, we still actually have all of our missiles and nukes. And we could start making trouble for you and ruin your whole narrative of I tame North Korea.
And Trump's responding by
like, okay, keep testing missiles. Yeah. So that's scary. But also because North Korea knows that their whole path here is to keep Trump happy with them. They're both testing missiles and at the same time sending beautiful, lovely letters to Trump.
Why aren't these letters part of public record? Aren't these part of the presidential record? Shouldn't these be open, like, available to the public?
Yeah, in 30 years.
Oh, there's
in
a
30 years.
God dang it. He'll be dead then.
Yeah, yeah. There's no like.
I hope I'm still alive just to see that. I really want to just live long enough to see these letters.
It's kind of like, it's like, dearest Trump.
No, I think they're going to call him Donald. I think Kim's going to call him Donald.
Oh, it's you try. Well, but he likes being called. No, no, it's going to be dearest sir.
Sir, yeah. Dear sir.
Dear sir.
Leader of the free world.
Last time I saw you, I had tears in my eyes, sir.
Wow.
So, but like, here's how insane we know the letters are. We know that in the last one he got, this beautiful missive that he got that was like, oh, we're so sorry about these nuclear short-range missiles that we're testing out. But Kim Jong-un, he only smiles when he's with you.
What?
I'm not making...
Excuse
me? That's not me being sarcastic. That is actually like what he's talking about. Like, these letters say that Kim Jong-un, oh, he only smiles when he's with you, Mr. Donald, sir.
What the hell? That is so weird.
He's so easy to play. He is so fucking easy to play. And the Republicans would be like, actually, our new strategic like goals and alliances and our new strategic plan for the whole of American national security, we're on Team North Korea now. Mm-hmm. So actually, Trump is advancing our goals because we're Team North Korea now, so it's fine.
We're Team North Korea now.
It's terrifying. It's terrifying. It's so fucking terrifying.
All right. All right, so
let's move on.
Let's move on to some big news that happened over the weekend.
Let's go from North Korean like love fest with the president to
this just terrible seedy, awful story that just gets worse and worse. Okay, Jeffrey Epstein was found having committed suicide in his cell. I think it was over the weekend, right? Saturday, Sunday, something like that. I was in Canada at
like
the time.
6:30. They found him 6:30 a.m. Saturday.
Yeah. Now Epstein
rest
had
in fucking no peace, dude.
He had apparently about, 10 days prior also attempted to commit suicide. He was supposed to be under suicide watch.
No, he was off of it.
He was off of it? Okay.
Yeah, here's what we know. I guess Canada was not... Was Canada obsessed with Epstein news? I'm curious.
You know, in the middle of a wedding, it was hard to know. But no, I would say no. Nobody
you were like, Jeffrey Epstein's dead.
I mean, like, me and my husband discussed it briefly, and it's like, all right, we got to get dressed for, like, day four of the wedding. So, no. Our wedding's last
day
forever.
Day four of the wedding?
Yeah, they're long. Anyway, moving on.
Is that good or bad? I can't decide.
It's exhausting, but that is simply how South Asian weddings happen. Yeah. Now, the fun thing was
I'm down for that.
You know, it's a lot of partying. There was, I mean, in one reception, the groom actually drove the bride into the wedding hall, into the actual banquet hall in a Lamborghini. Like, the car entered the hall, Susan. Anyhow, look, I got my hair and makeup done every day. I felt great. I look great. That's all that matters. Back to Epstein.
Oh, you look gorgeous.
Thank you. Back to Epstein.
So, anyway, straight up putting this out there. So Epstein committed suicide. He was in MCC, the Manhattan Federal Jail. He had, it seems now very likely, tried to commit suicide back in late July. At the time, he had a cellmate who I meant to read in the story, never did. It was some like former New York cop who like killed someone. I don't even know. Anyway, this good guy, murderer, former cop stopped the suicide attempt and saved him. But Epstein then claimed that he was attacked. So it wasn't a failed suicide attempt. It was very unclear and weird and like whatever. So he was on suicide watch for a bit, but suicide watch is terrible. It's not a great place to be. If you're he's not a billionaire. If you're even a millionaire and you have attorneys, you don't want to be on suicide watch. You have to wear like blankets that are made of like the stuff you like use to put in your hands in ovens, oven mitts.
Oh dear.
It's not a great place to be. So like, yeah, if you get money, you get your attorneys like, hell no, get them off suicide watch. Mm-hmm. He was off suicide watch. He was also his ex-cop murderer, alleged murderer cellmate. I don't even know. Apparently bonded out. So he was left alone in a cell.
Okay.
And he was found having strangled himself with a bedsheet in his cell. Hmm. Now, before, I know that, like, oh, God, Twitter was so bad. Like, thank God you were at a wedding in Canada because Twitter
I did see the insanity around all the immediate conspiracy.
Oh, my God. It was so fucking
everybody
terrible.
Everybody
was so
accusing
angry.
Everybody of killing Epstein. Everybody.
It was the worst. I'm like, the internet in America was a bad idea. Let's just cancel all of this.
Yeah, it was bad.
Like, okay, Epstein killed himself. Like, the conspiracy theories need to stop right now. Because
and by the way, the president of the United States, didn't he also retweet some conspiracies on this too? Yeah, about Clinton.
Clinton body count. Yeah.
Crazy. Yeah.
And
crazy.
He doesn't even believe that shit. But, like, also, he's the one who killed Epstein because he's in charge of... He had custody of Epstein. Right. Epstein was in his custody. Right. He was responsible for everyone in that fucking line succession. Like, he... Like, Epstein's death is on Trump's head. Not in, like, the sense of, like, he wanted to secretly kill Epstein to cover up his, like, pedophile traps, whatever. No. He is responsible. This man died, and he is responsible for putting people in charge who would see him not die. So, yeah, this is all Trump's fault. But Trump, like, the thing is, like, and this is the worst part, I'm sure, like, I mean, you know how, like, everyone's like, oh, my God, how is it possible that someone in jail this important could have killed? Of course it's possible. The jails are fucking shit shows, understaffed, underfunded. They're fucking murder holes. Of course he's able to kill himself. It's not even a question. Like, if he was actually suicidal, like, of course he's going to be able to do it.
Right. He's looking for the opportunity. He's looking for the opportunity. And it's not that difficult to find the opportunity. And then on top of that, reporting today saying that guards slept through their shift and, like, slept, like, 3 hours he wasn't checked on. Then they falsified records to, like, make it look like they had checked on him. So, yeah, 3 hours, plenty of time. Man's got a bed sheet.
Let's back up a bit. Let's go back to April this year when our new Attorney General, Bob Barr, testified before Congress. And he was asked about certain issues in the Bureau of Prisons.
Help me square with that. And is this a national problem that you're finding across the BOP?
I think this is an area where we have stumbled. And I'll tell you, I've been looking into this because it's been very frustrating to me, because I think I've always supported Bureau of Prisons in the past and think it's a great organization. And if we're going to have people incarcerated, we have to make sure they're incarcerated under proper conditions.
Right.
We are, the way I look at it, our authorized level is good and adequate. It's that we're 4 to 5,000 people short of our authorized level. Now, why has that come about? A part of that overall number may be because of the hiring freeze, but which I lifted yesterday.
Oh, good.
But those slots were really in the regional and in the headquarters. The shortages out in the prison facilities themselves was not the freeze. I think what it is frankly bureaucracy, and I don't say this in a bad sense, just the way these organizations go about bringing in people, they lead much to much of a lead time. Mm-hmm. So the way it works in the Bureau of Prison, if a person at this level leaves, then the next person moves up, and they don't start the process of hiring a new person until sort of everyone's taken a new chair.
Right.
And then they go out, and it takes months and months and months to get that person on board. That makes no sense, because every year we lose 2,600 of these correctional officers. So my view is we just have to turn on the spigot and just keep these new entry-level people coming in at a rate where we're going to be able to get up to and maintain our enacted level. So I think this is largely a snafu by the department, and that's how I interpret it, and that's how I'm approaching it.
Yeah, a snafu. That's what Barr called this issue with prison staffing. But what Barr is saying, that ain't right, because the whole freeze, Barr's like, oh, it only affected our white-collar administrative staff. You know, it's a regrettable snafu, but it's not. No. This was a freeze that Trump instituted. And so in 2018, we had a spending plan from the DOJ, and it recommended a cut of 6,000 jobs. And we also had a sustained decrease in the budget from 2017, because when Trump came into office in January, one of his first acts was to, like, decrease funding to the BOP and to decrease staffing even further. Not just staffing for, like, the white-collar workers, like Barr tried to play it off. They also cut staffing for people on the ground. What happened was a lot of people in the prison system who worked there as, like, teachers and counselors, they were then reassigned to work as guards.
Oh, dear God. You're kidding me.
And that's what happened for Epstein. One of Epstein's guards was not a guard. We don't know who she was, but she was a teacher, apparently, or something like that.
Oh, my God.
Who was typically not a guard, and she was, yeah. Anyway, on Monday, before, like, the police group somewhere in the South, I don't remember now, he gave a speech about what was happening, And on Monday, here's what he had to say about the whole Epstein jail situation.
I'd like to briefly address news from the Manhattan Correctional Center over the weekend regarding Jeffrey Epstein. This sex trafficking case was very important to the Department of Justice and to me personally. It was important to the dedicated prosecutors in the Southern District of New York and to our FBI agents who investigated the case and were preparing it for trial. Most importantly, this case was important to the victims who had the courage to come forward and deserve the opportunity to confront the accused in the courtroom. I was appalled, and indeed the whole department was, and frankly, angry, to learn of the MCC's failure to adequately secure this prisoner. We are now learning of serious irregularities at this facility that are deeply concerning and demand a thorough investigation. The FBI and the Office of Inspector General are doing just that. We will get to the bottom of what happened, and there will be accountability. But let me assure you that this case will continue on against anyone who was complicit with Epstein. Any co-conspirators should not rest easy. The victims deserve justice, and they will get it.
Yeah. He's acting like the BOP is not, like, under the DOJ, under his control. He's like, oh, there were some serious irregularities here. Like, things were not, shockingly, were not up to standards. Like, things were not running great. Like, no, of course they were. You knew they were not running great. You knew they were understaffed. Mm. You're in charge of that. Like, this is your responsibility to make sure that this does not happen. And like Trump, he is distancing. He's like, oh, I can't believe this horrible thing happened at this place I'm totally not in control of.
Do you think it's possible that Barr was like, eh, if he kills himself, he kills himself. No loss to us.
I don't think, no. Barr would not have wanted him dead. No one, I mean, possibly guards on the ground, because they're usually, I mean, they got their own.
They got their issues.
To deal with.
Yeah.
Barr would not have wanted him dead. Barr's embarrassed and trying to pretend he's not responsible. He and Trump are responsible for this. Mm. And problems at MCC are not new. There's been a lot of very, very high profile, like basically every high profile federal prisoner on the East Coast has been at MCC, and most of them have had some kind of high class, like, security issue. Maybe not El Chapo. I can't remember if he had any security issues. I don't remember him actually. So not him, but everyone else basically, yeah. We had Reza Zarab, the Iranian money launderer. He had a knife pulled on him by another inmate. He bribed a guard for contraband. We had Joshua Schulte, the guy who had the CIA, the Vault 7, whatever leak, who got a contraband cell phone while in the MCC and then leaked more secrets out from the MCC. So the idea that security is not top notch is not a secret. So Barr is just covering his ass.
So, you know, Susan, when I moved into our new house a couple of years ago, I was like, listen, this may or may not be my forever home, but I'm going to buy furniture that, you know, I want to keep forever. And I immediately thought of Joybird because they make some of the most beautiful custom furniture I've ever seen. And I've been seeing their ads online for years, and I finally got a chance to get some furniture from them.
I am not a home design person, but we moved recently and I had to fill out the more than one bedroom we had for. And the Joybird stuff is so great. I'm like looking at the stuff. I'm like, oh, this is what people like magazine, like the stuff to send out, like look through. I'm like thumbing through photos of like couches. I'm like, this one's good. This one's good. They're all good.
Joybird. Yes. Well, no, you can't have them all. But here's the thing.
Don't fit all.
Joybird just released their summer lookbook, and I love these lookbooks. I am a glutton for lookbooks. And they've got new, beautiful, like, summer designs, like the Soto outdoor chair, the Liam leather sofa, and a Jules brass planter. They really have beautiful, vibrant colors that, I mean, I've just never seen in furniture, ever.
Oh, did you get a swatch pack? I got one. Like, just so I could imagine the furniture I could possibly maybe have one day.
You know,
the colors are freaking amazing. And the textures. They have this like velvet thing that you'd think is like too fancy to have on furniture that might get like a cat on it, but it's great and it's fun and bright colors. I like all their shit, let's be real.
That's the thing. Like, look, if velvet is not your thing, you can go with a rich, buttery leather. They've got basically something for everybody. And I actually did not get the swatch pack because I was like, I know what I like. I love indigo. I'm a big fan of indigo. Indigo. I love indigo. I love everything in indigo. Turquoise is great too, but you know, maybe when I redo my basement, but I went with indigo this time. Look, Joybird also has free personal design consultants to help you nail down your perfect design. Every single one of their pieces is made by hand with care and precision, and they use high quality hardwood and responsibly resourced materials. Also, they've got a limited lifetime warranty that's included in your purchase.
So see how Joybird can help you design your dream space. Make furniture your own at joybird.com/45th. Create the furniture that brings you joy at joybird.com/45th. Go to joybird.com/45th and receive an exclusive offer for 25% off your first order by using the code 45th.
So I see that you noted that like nationwide, there's been like 6,000 positions eliminated. Is this
more than that now? But yeah.
Is that because of budget decreases? Is that because they are incarcerating less people? What the heck's going on?
No, it's because when Trump came in, he did a whole massive firing freeze across a lot of agencies. It was extended to places like state and whatnot. But his, like, I think it was like January 24th, 2017.
Okay. I didn't know BOP was part of that.
Yeah. Well, Trump came in. He's like, I'm going to cut staff everywhere. So he did a freeze. And Barr and his lying, deceptive bullshit appearance before the Hill in April was like, I have quickly put an end to that policy, without specifying that it was Trump's policy that he's now fixing, because Barr, while a morally Republican jackass, is not an idiot. And he knows that was a bad idea with bad consequences that was going to help shit. So he was trying to fix Trump's mess to some extent, but it could not be fixed in time.
Well, here's what I want to know. I want to know really how this is going to impact other people who are implicated in this entire, you know, in this entire business. Is it going to? Is it not going to? I know that like for Epstein's victims, like this is like justice being taken away from them. I'm not crying any tears with this man, but yeah, he should have gotten his due in terms of serving a sentence and facing what he did. But what about everybody else? And I think that's what the question is for a lot of people. Like, what does this mean for everybody else? For all the other people who might be indicted, who might be implicated, whose records this guy might have, and assuming the feds have it now, I mean, does it make any difference anyhow for them?
So here's why I hate the conspiracy theories. Like, I hate them, one, mostly because the idea that, like, this is not an easily explainable expected death because the system's so fucked up. Like, everyone who thinks it has to be conspiracy, I'm like, I get angry. I'm like, Jesus Christ, you know what you're talking about. This is so fucked up of a system. Of course they couldn't keep him alive. They can't keep anything alive. It's terrible.
I mean, any bureaucracy has like these major, but this is worse. I mean, like, you
this
know.
Is the jails yeah. are just fucking like suicide centers. So look at like jails, the suicide rates are insane. You are in prison. It's still a problem, but it's not astronomical. Like suicides happen and they happen too often, but not to the extreme, shocking, scary degree of suicides in jails. They're not suicides at that point. Like, when you have that many suicides, that number, it's not just an act by a person on themselves. That is an act that was enforced on them by the system they're at. Anyway, point being, it's not like anyone else is helped by Epstein's suicide. Epstein has helped. He got out. He won. He succeeded. Like, he won. He managed to do it. Helped him. You know, rotten hell, dude. But it's not like it's going to, like, stop anything else coming out. Epstein was already not talking. There were several attempts at court orders to get him to name people who were involved in the conspiracy. Some of the victims who were involved were, they knew that they'd interacted with certain individuals, but they did not know the names, and they couldn't identify them. So they were trying to force Epstein to say, like, who is the woman or the man that interacted with me that day then? And Epstein was not answering. He was taking the fifth. He wasn't giving him info. He was never going to go free again. Like, there's no deal he possibly could have made. His only hope was to get bail and flee the country. So him dying really just makes things worse for all of his accomplices, because now they have no info to offer. Epstein was the top dog in the prosecution, and they could use their info on him to minimize or escape sentences for themselves. guess what?
He's gone.
Now they can't.
Right.
Yeah.
You're
the top dog.
He was the leverage, right? Although, would he have been leverage? I mean, like, they already got him. They got him first. So, speaking of accomplices, I'm not going to try to say her name. You want to try it?
Ghislaine Maxwell?
Is that how you say Ghislaine?
I have no idea. I'm making that up.
Miss Maxwell.
Again, I don't watch TV, so I watch Fox News to see updates on how Fox is covering stuff. I don't watch TV.
Otherwise, we just read and try to figure it out.
Yeah. So Ghislaine Maxwell. Yeah. That sounds like very posh and British. I don't know.
This woman who for years and years, decades perhaps, was basically trafficking, recruiting, finding young girls for Epstein at different places all around the country, including tennis clubs and schools and just girls hanging out.
Mar-a-Lago.
Exactly. Mar-a-Lago. And so apparently the feds, it's weird. Apparently, I just read yesterday in a story that the government was having trouble finding her, but today apparently she's been found living outside of Boston in some mansion. How did she?
She's been there for years.
For years.
Yeah.
What the hell? Well, first of all, I'm surprised she didn't leave the country a long time ago.
Oh my God. She's going to regret that. She needs to leave right now. She needs to get the hell out of
She needs to leave right now.
As her non-attorney, I would advise her to find a nice exotic island somewhere.
It might be a little too late.
But not Pedo Island. Well, no, it's not too late. She can still, presumably still has a passport. So.
Or many.
She should.
Multiple passports.
Or many.
Yeah. Maybe not only that, apparently, I read a piece in which it reported that she actually got a pilot's license. So she would be able to fly folks around and evade any kind of record keeping of who's coming and going and when. So who knows? Maybe she already flew the coop.
So some of Epstein's pilots did a good job of record keeping on their flight logs.
Yep.
And they did their job. They're pilots. They have to keep records of how much weight's on the plane, where they went where, and they wrote down names. I'm guessing from the fact we don't have any records of her flights that she did not do that. So she was much more discreet in terms of the pilots that were the professional pilots, they're on a flight today with Jeffrey Epstein and Bill Gates. On a flight today with Jeffrey Epstein and Bill Clinton and Kevin Spacey and Chris Tucker, because that's a fucking nightmare flight right there.
Oh my God. Really?
Or on a flight with Jeffrey Epstein and his brother Mark and Donald Trump. So yeah, they kept the records. Or Alan Dershowitz, who was on the plane all the fucking time. Anyway, two of his, I don't know what word to use for them, his arrangers, his
handlers,
child sex trafficking managers.
Fixers, yeah.
Child sex trafficking managers had licenses, including the one he apparently bought from Eastern Europe. So it's so messed up. I've been reading the FBI files off and on for a couple of weeks, and it is just.
Don't do that to yourself.
It's just so fucked up.
It was interesting. Trump tweeted, I think when he was tweeting, it might have been that one time when he tweeted with a Clinton body count hashtag, he tweeted a partial list. From one of the pilot's logs that showed Bill Clinton. But further down in the same thread was his name. He's such an idiot.
Yeah. Oh, he's on there too. I mean, and the thing is, so not everyone on those lists was involved in child sex trafficking. I mean, the flight with
Were there ever any women on
Bill
these
Clinton,
lists, Susan?
Kevin
I'm
Spacey.
Wondering.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Virginia Roberts, who was the lead plaintiff in one of the civil suits, is on there all the time. She's the one who was trafficked out to Prince Andrew.
I mean, no, I don't mean women like that. I mean prominent women. I mean women who are
Yeah. Okay. What's a Prince Andrew's wife? Sarah Ferguson? Is that right?
Oh,
she's
really?
On there.
Oh God, okay.
Lots of wives are on there. So not all the flights are sex orgies or anything. There are women who there's also I'm blanking. There are a few high profile women who it's not clear what they're where they also child sex trafficking managers the rest of his harem was. These are businesswomen who actually are hyper-profile in their own right, and they were on the flights. It's not clear what their involvement was, but there were women. It was not just, creeper dudes. Anyway, it's all fucking terrible. It's all fucking gross. It's extremely depressing. And I keep circling back to to Maxwell, Ghislaine Maxwell, who's like the daughter of like a scam artist.
Billionaire.
European, like a UK version of Jeffrey Epstein. Like, I can't understand the why of it. I don't want to understand it necessarily, but like, who would do this? Who would...
You know, I will venture a guess that she herself was probably abused when she was a young girl.
I mean,
because a lot of
his accomplices were his own literal victims.
Right.
She wasn't. She dated him as an adult, but some of his actual child victims grew up and became his arrangers.
Because he groomed them too. I mean, this is not uncommon. Yeah. And if her father was also the same kind of person, imagine he's surrounded by the same kind of men. You think those men weren't like predators towards her as a young girl? I mean, like, I don't know. I imagine that there's, it doesn't mean she shouldn't pay for the crime she's committed, but I imagine she was probably victimized herself when she was, who knows for how long, but yeah, she's, what I don't understand is, is she the subject of any of these suits though? The civil suits?
Oh yeah. She is like the heart and center of like Virginia Roberts. Her new name is like Jeffrey or something.
Okay.
Her married name. She is so there's a defamation suit against her because she was like, Virginia Roberts is lying about all this. So she's like, oh hell no. And sued her for it. So she is front and center of some of the civil suits. She, now that Epstein is dead, she's probably front and center of the criminal suits because she was heavily involved in the trafficking and the arranging. Oh, and like there's some big name, like the thing, this is another reason why the Epstein's death is not a freaking conspiracy. At least Epstein didn't kill his victims. So you know what? They're still around and still telling us what happened. We know who was involved. We don't know everything yet. I'm sure there's lots of people who are scared to come forward. But it's not like this is a big secret. Like, it was awful and terrible and gross and expansive. But it's not a surprise at this point.
No. And this was, in certain circles, this was a secret in plain sight. I mean, I'm sure that circles and circles of people knew that this guy had this racket going, right? And this is where you could go for certain things. I mean
leaders. Donald Trump did. In 2002, he gave an interview about Jeffrey Epstein. He's like, Epstein sure loves his party life, and he loves the women, especially the ones on the younger side.
Ha-ha. Younger side, yeah, yeah.
You know what kills me? Like, Jeffrey Epstein's contact records and his, I guess, the black book they're calling it. He has all of his contacts, you know, people everywhere. And he has Trump in there, of course. They knew each other. They were once friends before they got in a fallout over the whole West Palm Mansion thing that bought by Rushmore too much. Anyway, guess whose numbers are in there? Ivanka's. Guess who's not? Eric's or Don Jr.'s or anyone else's? Like, wouldn't you as a father, if you knew that, I mean, you knew, like, he knew who Jeffrey Epstein was.
Yeah.
And, like, you're still letting your daughter, like, hang out with him? No, it's not great.
I mean, Trump's already weird when it comes to Ivanka.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, God knows what is the reality in that relationship. You know, I read this weird profile, I think it was in Vogue, of Ivanka Trump this week, where they talked about how she's kind of like the bigger threat in a way. Like, you know, I mean, she's already apparently expressed interest in becoming the first female president of the United States. Kill me now.
Wait, really? Oh, God.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And so it just talks about, you know, how because she is so much more refined than her father.
She is.
That she could be, like, let's say Trump's like, okay, I'm going to step down and she could be the heir to his throne, or he can't get his third and fourth and fifth terms, which he keeps trying to get, including encouraging people at like different events to hashtag and make that trend. But you know what it said in there, that apparently, and I just thought this was so strange. I don't know. Maybe I'm reading too much into this. It said that when Ivanka addresses, when she's around her father, she wears blue contact lenses, even though she has brown eyes.
What?
Yeah. I thought that was really
odd. I hope that is fake news, because that's some crazy shit.
No, I think it's in Vanity Fair. And I'm pretty sure that's, they couldn't print that unless that was, had some truth to it. Yeah. And that made me think, I don't know. I don't want to feel sorry for her, but I kind of feel sorry for her.
I feel sorry for her kids. But anyway, it's very clear that Don Jr. and Eric had no chance of, like, falling in line succession. So, like, it's only Ivanka, who, to her credit, has done an amazing job of having poise and, like, superficial competence. Like, she is the polished version of what Trump never could be.
She is. And I mean, to be fair, she is a total crook, but she's not as obnoxious as, like, Don Jr. and Eric. I mean, they're just reprehensible. They're online, in the media. She's much more, like, measured and often gives the kinds of responses that you would want to hear from somebody in a position of leadership.
She has a full schedule of talking to reporters and saying, a source close to Ivanka Trump says that she tried very hard to stop her dad from doing that terrible thing.
Right, right, right. That source is Ivanka Trump. All right. Okay, guys, so we're going to wrap up for this week. Thank you, Susan. I kind of like slightly yeah, drunk, whatever you are. I like
I'll
it.
I'll stop at one beer.
Let's try it with two next time. And I also kind of like recording this in the middle of the night, slurping our drinks. All right, guys, thanks for tuning in. We will be back in 7 days. A big thanks to all our listeners for tuning in to the 45th podcast week after week. And if you'd like to give us further support, you can do that by becoming a patron at patreon.com/45thpod. By doing so, you can become a supporter and patron for as little as $5 a month. And to do so, again, go to patreon.com/45thpod. A shout out and thank you to our sponsors. They make this program possible. And I urge our listeners to please check out our sponsors and use their products. And thank you to them for helping us produce week after week. Thank you to our audio producer, Hannah McCarthy, our executive producer, Meethal Thelhan, and you can find us on social media. We are on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Our handle is at 45th Pod. Our website is www.45thpod.com. Thanks again for tuning in. See you next week.